Are you using your phone, or is it using you? Rise above mass surveillance and discover a phone that protects your privacy and communications.
Above Phone does everything your old phone does, without tracking you, while giving you complete control over your phone and apps. We are better than big tech. It works with any cell service. No forced logins. No advertising or tracking. Download apps privately. Control your phone and its apps. Secure hardware.
Be sure to purchase Above Suite, our private communications and productivity suite that's run on our data center. You receive a VPN, email, calendar, video conferencing, encrypted chat, internet phone, and a search engine.
Don't worry if you're new. Every phone includes a free call with a real person to help you switch. You also get free email and chat support, free guides and video courses. We can take back our technology. We're here to help with tools and education. You have the power.
Rise above with Above Phone.
AbovePhone.com.
Welcome.
Free Thought Project Podcast.
I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Hello again, free thinkers. Welcome back to the Free Thought Project podcast. My name is Jason Bassler, and joining me is the Free Thought Project editor-in-chief, Matt Agarist. Matt, we're back once again. Are you as excited as I am about our guest this week?
Oh yeah, man. I can't wait to jump into this one. And it's good to be back on a regular schedule as well.
Yes, true. We did miss a couple weeks there, but we are back. And I've been looking forward to today's episode. You know, we certainly have a lot to get into, a lot to dissect. And for our diehard listeners, you probably noticed last week, we ran a new ad at the beginning of our podcast. And we've been searching long and hard for a sponsor for the show that aligned with our mission and our values, and we finally found one, and that sponsor is the Above Phone. And the reason why we went with the Above Phone guys is because these guys are not only selling a fantastic product, but they're also chipping away at the centralized power of big tech with their de-Googled phones. Now, I won't get into too much right now because I don't want to keep our guests waiting around, but definitely check out the link in the caption at the bottom of our podcast. We're definitely excited to have them as a sponsor, and the Above Phone is a great step in the direction of getting off the control grid. So definitely check that out. And I also wanted to once again mention that our children's book is now out and live on our site, littlefreethinkers.com. I mentioned that last week in the opener of our show, but if you missed it, we've been working on a children's book for the past couple years now called Little Free Thinkers, Know Your Rights. And the goal of the book is to teach children 6 to 12 their constitutional rights, how to assert them. And the book is geared towards libertarian parents trying to provide a foundation of liberty for their kids. And obviously, you know, that the Tuttle Twins, you know, kids books are great, but they're more slanted in conservatism. So our books are more for the libertarians. And if it does well, we're going to turn it into a series under the Little Free Thinkers banner. So definitely check that out as well. The link again is littlefreethinkers.com. And honestly, this would be an excellent gift for anyone with kids who appreciates and values liberty. So we got that part out of the way. I am going to say a few words to introduce our guest. So we have the lovely and brilliant Martha Bueno on the show today, and we are super excited. And Martha, before I get into some of your credentials and accomplishments, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks so much for asking.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I guess for the few basement dwellers that don't know who Martha is, she exploded onto the Liberty scene around the beginning of the COVID years. And I'd imagine your work goes on before that, but that's kind of when I became more aware of your work. And since then, you've been very active. You currently serve as the chair of your city council. You ran as a libertarian in the 2022 elections for the Miami-Dade Board of County Commissioners, where you employed some controversial and, I guess you could say, non-traditional tactics to raise campaign funds, which I'm hoping to talk about during our conversation. You've also spoken at LibertyCon and Freedom Fest, and you've been on like almost all the popular conservative shows, including Tim Pool's Timcast, Louder with Crowder, Real Talk with Zuby. And of course, you know, last but not least, you're also an entrepreneur. So yeah, you're doing big things. And as I mentioned, you know, we have a lot to talk about because you're an interesting person. You're very active. But first, I wanted to talk about something that was trending all over the internet yesterday. And I know it's a topic that's near and dear to all three of us here. But yesterday was political prisoner Ross Ulbricht's 40th birthday and 11th year stuck in a cage for the non-crime of building a website. So I remember back in 2013 when Ross first was sentenced, and it just felt so unreal. You know, here's this guy who was close to my age, hasn't hurt anyone, hasn't committed any act of violence, but the sentence the judge gave him seemed so outlandish and unproportionate to his case and his supposed crime. So I know there is a video of you that reached over a million people when you asked Vivek Ramaswamy last year if he was aware of Ross's situation and if he would pardon him. And considering that the video reached so many people, it had to have. It's almost certain that it raised awareness for Ross's situation. But I was curious, with all the questions that you could have asked Vivek, what made you ask about Ross and his situation?
Well, like you said, Ross is one of those cases that it's near and dear to my heart. And obviously, I've known about Ross since before he was arrested, since before the government found out about it, or I don't know, came after him. But I am friends with his mom, Lynn Ulbricht. She's an amazing human being. And I think the thing that really drew me to this case was Lynn. Of course, I was aware of her, but during COVID, she moved to Miami, my city. And through our libertarian friends, somebody reached out to me and said, hey, Lynn is looking for a place to stay in Miami while she, you know, gets on her feet. And I was like, she needs to come stay with me. So she did for a while. And we hit it off, and we are now, I love this woman. I think she is incredible. And I think any mother that hears her story, and I'm a mother of four myself, you know, there's you just have to fall in love with her and realize, like, this is the ultimate mother. She put her life, her personal life, on hold, of course, to help her son and raise awareness for him. And the day before Ross's birthday, March 26th, is her birthday. So it was one of those things where, you know, how can you not speak out about this case? And for those that don't know, Ross Ulbricht, like you said, he's in a cage because he decided to make a website. And people are like, well, but that website sold drugs. Yes. However, it was like an eBay. It was very difficult to get on that site. You had to go to the dark web. You had to buy Bitcoin, not an easy feat, in 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013. And so children were not being sold on it like they are, unfortunately, today on most websites, including Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and the such. So there was very strict rules on the dark web, on the Silk Road, pardon me. Against that, there were, the number one thing sold on it was marijuana, something that today is pretty much legal all around the United States. I've made this point with the Farm Bill. It's pretty much legal. I mean, you can get some type of cannabinoid to get high in every state in America now legally. So it's just one of those things where the crime, the punishment does not fit the crime. I think it is a blatant abuse of power. The judge who sentenced him said that she was definitely taking into account his libertarian beliefs. And it's just an overall horrible case. So I'm glad that it was trending. I think that it's the least we can do for Ross. It's the least we can do for Lynn. These people have suffered so much And it is so un-American to put somebody in a prison for the crime of building a website. Because, again, he didn't sell drugs himself. He simply hosted the website and created it. And today on the dark web, you can find hundreds of the same website. And those people are not in jail. And Facebook, Instagram, none of those people are in jail either. So again, I just, you know, if we're going to make it fair, then let's start rounding up Zuckerberg and Elon Musk and everybody else, which we're not going to do. So why is Ross in jail?
Yeah, that's right. It is a travesty. And yes, he sold drugs on there, but it made the drug trade much safer, right? You could review the drugs. Like if people are selling things with fentanyl in it, which wasn't really a problem when Silk Road existed, but if drugs were dangerous and people were dying from them, you could leave reviews for the dealers on there and then they wouldn't be in business anymore. It was an amazing concept and something that actually just transformed the drug dealing business altogether, you know, and had the FBI not shut that down. Well, actually, you know, they did shut down Silk Road and put Ross in prison for life. And then like a million other Silk Road type dark web businesses popped up like whack-a-mole. You know, they had so many more come up after that. But yeah, that's one of the things that people missed. Like he provided a service that saved lives and he's in jail for two life sentences.
Plus 40 years. And it's not just that he was saving those lives. I mean, one of the major items sold on the Silk Road was insulin, believe it or not. And we never discussed that. Why doesn't the government want to bring up how many lives he saved by selling insulin that people could afford? And, you know, the whole story is just so tragic. And the fact that we don't talk about it enough. So going back to your question, why did I ask Vivek Ramaswamy? Well, Vivek actually came to speak to Lynn before that, and he did promise that he would free Ross. But I wanted to make sure that that promise was, you know, that the world heard it, because I think it's so important. And I think the world needs to hear that there is this support, that people that understand this case, they don't want to see Ross in jail. And so, yeah, it was just, I had to ask that question, and I'm glad that it trended as it did. And I'm glad that Vivek retweeted it. And I hope that he continues his support for Ross now that he's not running for president.
Absolutely. And it's not just social media or the world that needs to see the support for Ross. Like he needs to feel it as well. And I didn't unfortunately get a chance. I know I'd said on Twitter I was going to try to write to him for his birthday, but I did write to him for Christmas. And I try to at least once or twice a year. And what I put in that letter was just, you're not forgotten. Like, we still talk about you. We still appreciate, you know, your sacrifice, what you did for the Liberty Movement. And I just want him to know that. I think that's really important just for that moral support. And I could only imagine, you know, being stuck in a cage. And I know he's had some pretty heartbreaking posts, you know, talking about his experience living in that cell. And it certainly has to be dehumanizing and soul crushing. Now, you mentioned Lynn Albrecht there. And yeah, she seems like an absolute sweetheart. When we first started this podcast, we tried to connect with her. And unfortunately, the stars didn't align and we couldn't get her on. But I do want to get her back on eventually. So keep your eyes and ears out for that one, guys. And you know what really, I think, bothers me the most is when they post the pictures of his family at the dinner table and they always leave one chair open for Ross, you know, and it's like, man, he needs to be there. Like this guy did not harm a single person. You know, he didn't commit any fraudulent activity. He wasn't trying to, you know, scam people out of their money. He simply just built a website. And I think another thing too, just a quick caveat here, like Bitcoin's explosion over the past decade, there's a lot that we need to credit to Ross Ulbricht for. You know, there was a big upswing in Bitcoin's adoption right around the same time Silk Road came around. And I think that was probably one of the many catalysts that really launched Bitcoin into more of the alternative mainstream. So, you know, that aside, one of the things that I often hear anytime I post about Ross, there's always at least one comment at the bottom saying, well, what about the alleged, you know, murder for hire schemes that he was involved with? And anybody who's done some research knows that that was all
bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. All just bullshit. In fact, they never even, you know, prosecuted him. That allegation never even came up in court. It was something simply to smear him within the media and nothing more than slander. So do you have anything like on that that maybe could clarify or do you know by talking to Lynn, you know, what the story is behind that?
Yeah. So I don't know that I have any insider knowledge, but this comes from just, you know, the amount of research. I want to go back really quickly to the Bitcoin thing. Ross is credited with giving Bitcoin its first use case. Without Ross, Bitcoin would definitely not be where it is today, because before that it was, oh, somebody bought a pizza for 10,000 Bitcoin or whatever. I mean, there was no use for it. And that is the reason why Ross is in that cage today. It is not the drugs. Actually, everybody who sold drugs on the website, there was a maximum sentence of 7 years. So, you know, people are like, oh, well, he knew drugs were being sold. Sure. And the people selling those drugs are already all free. Nobody is in a cage today for selling drugs on the Silk Road except for Ross. And Ross's big crime was giving rise to Bitcoin. He is in jail for something that we are currently making money on today. He is in jail because he dared to challenge the U.S. government to a coin that could bypass the United States monetary system. There was no taxes on anything sold on the Silk Road. And you know that that is really, I mean, remember, Al Capone was not put in jail for peddling alcohol. He was put in jail for evasion of taxes. So, it's there's a problem in this country with too much government. But of course, I'm preaching to the choir. So as far as the murder for hire thing, my understanding of it is that there were actually two FBI agents that ended up going to jail for embezzling money from the Silk Road, for doing all sorts of things. And they had access to those servers that everybody brings up. Oh, well, there's this chat log on the server. Yes, there is. And one of the people who was a supposed target, Seth Green, has come out to say that he knows that it was not, in fact, Ross, that Ross would never do something like that. And that the likely subjects are those two FBI agents who had access to those server logs and who ended up going to jail for a lot of shady activity. Unfortunately, not that. You know, it's just, it's really terrible, because let's just assume for a minute that Ross did do it, which I don't think he did, but okay, let's just give those people that point. The charge for murder for hire is 10 years in jail. So even if Ross did it, he's already served the time. There is no excuse to keep him in jail. And when people bring that up, it's like, well, but he did these things. How long are we going to hold that over the head of somebody who the government, I mean, think about it. They gave him 240 years in jail. You'd think that if they had some kind of evidence of him being, you know, requesting a murder for hire, they would have used that. You know, they would have been like, nope. So I think we need to just stop blaming him for something that he was not charged for.
Yeah, he wasn't convicted of anything having to do with murder for hire at all. It was all the website stuff. And it's just, it's frustrating to hear people repeat that lie that was basically started by the FBI to muddy the waters of his case, which led to the ultimately being convicted in the court of public opinion prior to, because, you know, that these lies were spread about him trying to hire somebody for murder.
Yep. Yep. It's just insanity to me that this is where we are in America. And I mean, obviously we have a problem, you know, where somebody could be tried in such a heinous crime, you know, just in such a heinous way. And then there's no recourse for him. His family tried to take this to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court would refuse to hear it. The appeals court, wouldn't go anywhere. So this poor man, the only solution for Ross today is clemency from the president. From any sitting president. So Trump before did not do it. I don't see a world where Biden will do it. If Trump wins again, I hope he will do it. But it's just kind of, where do we go from here? He needs one person, that one person, that president has all the power in their hands. And I just can't imagine them doing it.
Yeah, when 2018, I remember the Libertarian Party asked Donald Trump to pardon Ross Ulbricht, and instead he pardoned like several war criminals and Lil Wayne,
Kodak Black,
but not a guy who's saved lives. Definitely not him.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, and again, the suffering for his family is just terrible, but here we are. Thank you guys for...
Isn't it crazy, like you said, that most of the substances sold on the Silk Road back then were weed, and look how far along we are now. You know, it's almost like the fact that they still have all these people sitting in prison for selling weed that's, you know, that's legal in most of the country, even in states where it's not technically legal, like you could, it's still sold like Delta 8. There's all these different versions of it, you know, like working around the government prohibition, which is amazing. I love the free market. And I believe that you're in this industry. And I definitely wanted to get into that, unless Jason had something else or y'all wanted to keep talking about Ross Ulbricht. But any objections?
Yeah, I was going to talk about the drug war a little bit, but I mean, the weed.
That's what I want to talk about. Right. But yeah.
My favorite subject. Let's go.
Yeah, I know you're in the CBD Delta 8 business. I was I grew indoors for 2 years in Louisiana, which was hard to do, and I was eventually lobbied out of business by the monopoly that took over a massive international pharmaceutical company that has a monopoly now in the state, so can't even compete. But yeah, it's amazing how the prohibition is just starting to dissipate, and but not in your state. In your state, it actually is going backwards, and we just saw that recently with Florida outlawing basically hemp, right?
Basically,
which is insane. I mean, they're doing it as the, you know, the CBD derived THC Delta 8, which is just silly. But I wanted to get your thoughts on that. What do you think? Like, Florida pretends to be this bastion of freedom, and here we are moving backwards as the rest of the country moves forward in regards to marijuana laws.
Yeah, Florida, we do love to say the free state of Florida, and people think that Governor DeSantis is this, you know, freedom guy, and then he does things like this, or banning, you know, he recently banned children under the age of 14 of having social media. So, I mean, while you may think that's a good thing, parents do have a right. So cannabis, you know, the misnomer is that hemp and cannabis are very different things, as I'm sure you guys are aware. Hemp is just a low THC cannabis. It's the same plant. It's a cannabis sativa plant. And so if it has less than 1% THC, we consider it hemp. And with the Farm Bill, they literally legalized THC, as long as it's in low doses. And as you said, the free market came around and figured out how we can get from Delta 9 to Delta 8 to all of these different cannabinoids, but it's not just to get you high. There are over 160 cannabinoids in the plant, and many of those do these wonderful things that we're only just beginning to scratch the surface, because of course it's been illegal for, you know, at least 50 years. It's closer to, or if not more than 100, it's been illegal since the 1913. So it's been over 100 years. It's over, you know, 111 years. But the thing is, one of the cannabinoids that they made, or they're attempting to make illegal in Florida with SB 1698, which, by the way, we're asking Governor DeSantis to veto this bill. It is a terrible bill. They appropriated over $2 million of taxpayer funds to go after people who are literally selling federally legal products. It's just a horrible bill. But one of the items that they made illegal in it is THCV, and that is V like Victor. And THCV in studies, unfortunately, right now, what we have published is mice studies, but, you know, take it for what it is. In mice studies, it finds that THCV actually helps with diabetes. It helps lower insulin levels in people and helps them actually feel less hungry. So it seems to be something that would be great for people who are attempting to lose weight or attempting to, you know, just get healthier. Why would our government here in Florida, it cannot get you high. So why would our government choose this particular one to add onto the controlled substance list? And that is just, you know, one of those things where I think people look at the government like, well, they know what they're doing. And I want to say, yeah, they absolutely know what they're doing. Their donors are big pharma, big alcohol. You know, these companies that make money off of selling you drugs that are not nearly as good for you as a plant, as a God-given plant that just grows naturally in the ground. So, you know, we wouldn't want competition for Ozempic, for example. And that's really what's happening here. This is a big cannabis swing at mom and pop shops. So basically, they went after smoke shops mostly on the Delta 8, Delta 10, HHC, and other cannabinoids and this THCV. And they also put in another bill, SB1006, which goes against flavored vapes unless they are approved by the FDA. And we know who has been approved by the FDA, and it's not small mom and pop vapes, vape companies. It's only the large nicotine tobacco companies. So it's really unfortunate. I hope people wake up to the scam that the Florida legislature just passed. And if not, well, there's the other 48 states or 49 states that did not do this.
Sure. I mean, as someone who appreciates cannabis, I really like that you have been addressing some of the tough questions within the conservative movement about the negative stigma associated to cannabis. And I still think there's a bit of like a reefer madness element that lingers around since like the 1930s. And I think it was only amplified by the war on drugs propaganda and like the 80s and 90s anti-drug PSAs. But yeah, it does feel like hemp, the industrial hemp is just kind of coming online into its full potential now. And imagine if we, you know, utilized that throughout the past century, that the world would definitely look like a much different place. And we've seen the damage that, you know, things that are legalized like alcohol and tobacco has caused to the human species over the past, Jesus, I don't know, century, you know, and you never hear anybody on their deathbed saying, you know, I wish I didn't smoke so much weed. So like, why do you think there's still like this negative connotation associated to cannabis, even when it's legalized? And if you want, you know, you could use this opportunity to talk about your brand and company a little bit too, which I think is what argood.com.
Argood.com. Absolutely. So, yeah, I absolutely think there is a level of prohibition mentality here. You know, a lot of people will say things like, well, but it hasn't been studied, so you don't know. You know, cannabis has never killed anybody. And the Florida government used some wild statistics about over 200 people have died of a cannabis overdose. And then when you look at the numbers, it's, you know, they did a blood test on people who passed away and they had fentanyl and they had all these other drugs in their system and cannabis. So it's kind of like when you, you know, died with COVID or you died of COVID. They love to use those numbers. They skew it. And like I said, you know, there's just so much that this plant can help people, which is why I'm interested in it. We're actually, so our first product was a Delta 8 product. We produced a chewable nano-emulsified tablet. A lot of them speak to say a tablet that just works really fast. It's a really quick edible. You can take it and feel the effects in 10 to 15 minutes. It's always a consistent feeling. It's really great for anxiety, all these things, but we're now shifting our focus more towards solutions because these cannabinoids are proving that they actually work for things like pain, anxiety, moods, you know, potentially weight loss, definitely focus with THCV. So there's a lot of good qualities coming from these cannabinoids. And the only way to really research it and find out if it works is to put it out on the market and let people try them. So that's where we're going specifically with Argood. I don't think that getting people high was ever my focus. It's always been, this plant really worked for me. I've made several posts online. I've talked about this openly, but I had a problem with my thyroid where my regular doctor, my regular MD was like, we're going to need to remove your thyroid within the next 6 months. I had been following it along. We had done several procedures to check on it. And they're like, yep, it's time. It needs to come out. And then I went to see a friend of mine who also happened to be a cannabinoid doctor. And she's like, have you considered trying the cancer dose? And I was like, no. And she's like, you should. I was totally not anti-cannabis. I just had never used it really up until that point. And so I did. And I used the cancer dose for 6 months and went back to my regular doctor. And we did our regular checkup before the surgery. And they couldn't find, you know, the problems that they wanted to remove my thyroid in the first place anymore. And wow. So I do not tell this to people. I was like, oh, go use cannabis. Is going to like take it with a grain of salt. I cannot tell you this. It would be illegal. You know, like I'm going to be sued if people think that I'm saying that. So take it for what it is. It worked for me. Whether it works for other people in other conditions, I can't say that. It worked for me. And in the process of that, I didn't realize that I also stopped taking other medications that I was using. I was on an arthritis medication. I have arthritis in my feet and it just stopped hurting. And it's so much so that I just forgot to refill my prescription. And months later, I'm like, oh, I haven't been taking that. And I have not. It's been now close to 10 years. This was 2015, 2016. So, you know, we're coming close to the decade. And I have not gone back onto my arthritis medication. And I still have my thyroid today. So take it for what it is.
That probably explains why it was illegal for so long, huh?
Do we want to say that? Do we want to say that the government's doing it on purpose? I mean, publicly?
Well, certainly the pharmaceutical industry does, right? The pharmaceutical industry is, you know, one of the top lobbyists to keep marijuana a Schedule I drug. So we know that for a fact, you know, and they're also heavily against Kratom as well.
Oh, they are.
You said something earlier that that made me think about Kratom and how it's, you know, it's very beneficial in a lot of the same ways that that hemp is, you know, and they're also attacking it the exact same way and in the same people every single time. Right. It's Scott Gottlieb, former head of the FDA and also former CEO at Merck, who claimed that they had never done any research on Kratom or at all at Merck. And yet that Merck has multiple patents on the alkaloids derived from the Kratom plant to specifically wean people off of opioids, right? It's like if there is a medicine in the pharmaceutical industry that can compete with cannabis or another natural plant out there, then the pharmaceutical industry is going to try to make that natural version illegal so they can sell the synthetic version. And we see that over and over again. I remember when
psychedelic mushrooms.
Yeah, yeah. What competes with psilocybin right now? Are we talking about like SSRIs? I'm curious. Like, I don't know that there's anything that could compete with pharmaceutical wise with psilocybin.
Well, sure. We have studies from the 50s where psilocybin was already showing promise for people with depression, with people, you know, with certain conditions, mental.
Oh, yes. More than anything. I thought that there was like a drug that had a similar effect as psilocybin. And no, I know the there's profound anti-depression effects from psilocybin and PTSD reversal and all kinds of stuff like that. Yeah. But I was curious. I thought that there was like a pharmaceutical.
That I'm aware of. I don't think that they've been able to like, come up with something good enough to compete.
You know,
yeah.
Pfizer's Tripanol.
I think that if we could solve those problems, you know, by ourselves without the help of not only big pharma. Think about the medical field itself, right? You are not allowed to walk into a pharmacy and purchase something for yourself without going to a doctor first. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of money to be made here. And I don't want to say that doctors are, you know, involved in this. I think most doctors get into the field because they want to save people's lives. They want to do the right thing. But then, you know, you kind of get into it and this is the way things are done. And unfortunately, that's just how it is. So, you know, you want to solve your depression. Well, you better go to a doctor and get onto the pharmaceutical stuff because you just can't solve it on your own. And that's just a sad state of the way things are today. We see so many young people having so many issues. I think, you know, the rise of social media plus just nowhere to go for these type of anxieties and just difficulties. It's a sad situation all the way around. And we're not going to solve it with more government. And nobody's really, you know, pushing back on that.
No, I don't see that happening at all. I do. You know, there's one thing, another thing about the drug war is that, and I've been seeing this in my Facebook feed recently, and it's that you can get ketamine delivered to your house now. I know that's not
that's
like a natural derivative of any of these things, but I've taken ketamine and it was a pretty profound experience for me. It was definitely life shifting, and it's pretty crazy that you can get that, but you can still go to jail now in Florida for having some hemp gummies.
I think ketamine is one of those drugs that I've also tried it, and it was also extremely profound for me. Mm-hmm. It's one of those experiences, but I do think that it, like everything, you need to know what you're doing. And I did it in a clinical setting with a doctor, with a psychologist, you know, so I think that that definitely helps. I do not recommend people just, especially not at a club, don't go messing around with those things. They're really profound, but you know, if you know what you're doing, why do we control it? Why do we tell people that they can't try it? And ketamine has an incredible result for people with extreme depression. And that was the real eye-opener, I think, realizing how we have solutions that have been legal. Ketamine is a drug that has been legal for veterinary medicine for decades, if not, you know, it's been around. People have been using it. It's been a club drug, especially in the gay scene, for a very long time. So I'm just, it's mind-boggling. Why are we making these drugs illegal? Well, because God forbid people actually solve their own problems. And I keep coming back to that because that's just the reality of it. There is no money to be made in government if people can solve their own problems. The money in government comes from people, you know, looking to government saying, save me from this. And then government's like, yes, we will tax you harder. We will spend more money. We still won't solve the problem, but we'll pretend that we are. And so now you're somehow better off. I'm not sure, you know, that they've ever solved anything that they claim that they could. And yet people still look to them and are like, you know what would solve this? More government.
Yeah. In fact, I wanted to get into that. But first, I was going to ask you guys if you happen to see that recent little clip of Don Lemon questioning Elon Musk as to why he had a ketamine prescription. And it was kind of awkward. Like, I don't know if you guys saw it, but it was definitely like a little strange. Like, first of all, like Elon Musk was a little hesitant, you know, like a little defensive. Like, why are you asking me this? Like, people don't usually talk about like personal medical choices and you know, their medications and stuff. But then he started to kind of open up about it. And he more or less said exactly what you were saying, Martha, like he suffers from depression. Sometimes he has what he calls like a brainstorm, and he just needs like some relief from it. So I thought that was kind of interesting, because he said one of the reasons why he came out on Twitter to talk about his ketamine use is to make it a little more normalized, like so people didn't feel like they're some criminal or some junkie or something who, you know, are having beneficial treatments from it. So, you know, Elon has some misses, and, you know, there's some definitely plenty of things to not like about him, but I definitely give him a little credit for speaking up in that regard. But recently in a tweet, you said, and I think it was actually this morning, all drugs should be legal. Prohibition has never worked, and it's not working now. There are drugs in maximum security prisons. Pretending the government has this situation handled isn't working. And, you know, here at the Free Thought Project, like we've been outwardly advocating against the drug war, I think since our inception, you know, for 10 years now. And I think, you know, what you're saying is like, you're just being logically consistent here. Like, you know, why are we still pretending like this is working, you know? And many of our friends on the right still kind of ignore the detrimental and life shattering, you know, negative externalities the drug war has produced over the past 50 years. Mm-hmm. And ignoring, you know, the 50 years plus of these heavy-handed authoritarian tactics, which really have done nothing to reduce the amount of drugs in society. And if anything, it's created more black markets, more criminal cartels south of the border. And, you know, not to mention there's like a estimated 80,000 SWAT raids a year in the U.S., which have done nothing, you know, to stop the influx of drugs. And
no, not raids like Breonna Taylor. Absolutely. It's just horrible.
And, you know, there's newer and more potent drugs like we were just talking about, like wreaking havoc now, like fentanyl, you know. But ironically, our friends on the left tend to agree with legalizing drugs, at least cannabis. And, you know, they'll admit the drug war is a failure, but in the same breath, they'll advocate for gun control and banning guns, which is, you know, theoretically kind of the same territory as banning drugs. And, you know, you guys were just talking about DeSantis, and, you know, he's also trying, you know, he just banned the drag shows last year. He's also trying to ban synthetic meat, you know? So I guess my question is, like, why is there such a disconnect with both sides when it comes to banning anything, which, you know, clearly doesn't work and only increases the size and scope of government? And, like, why has the drug war become such a low priority topic within the libertarian movement? It seems like it should be one of our biggest focuses.
It should be. My personal take on that is that we just don't have logical conversations in this country, unfortunately. When you talk to somebody, they can understand their moral, you know, justification for something, but thinking it through all the way to the end seems to be more challenging. So, like you said, the war on drugs, you know, we can't even keep drugs out of prison. We can't keep weapons out of prison. So if you can't keep it out of prison, a controlled environment, how can we keep it out of, you know, out of people's hands, out in the open, where you can just cross a border, pick something up, go, you know, come back. And I think that's the logical consistency there of thought, of the thought process. And, you know, I want to just say that they don't really teach logic, reasoning, thought processes yeah. in school anymore. Leave it to government to educate our kids. And then our kids are kind of not able to do those things. So is it on purpose? Probably so. You know, I hate to be the everything government does is terrible person, but literally everything government does is terrible.
Yeah. No getting around it.
No getting around it. I mean, they teach you in school to just obey. They don't teach you to think. So how are we going to ask people to think things through in a logical fashion when they've never had to do that? And I think that that's an invitation for people to start thinking things through. I hope that we can change the way we have conversations in this country. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, we definitely need more conversations in this country. Unfortunately, we are going in the opposite direction with people taking sides and then ignoring the other side and not refusing to listen, finding no common ground. And
I think there's a lot of common ground. We're so brainwashed into this mentality of the color of your skin or something is more important than, you know, and when you go out into the real world, do you really find, I mean, it's been my experience. I don't know if it's been yours, but I don't find that people actually hate others based on the color of their skin or other, you know, your nationality or whatever. It's very much a Twitter, a social media thing, a media thing. But yes. Then you go out into the streets and it's like, oh, hey, you know,
it certainly is. And both sides of this wild divide are they both push it and they both put out like utterly ridiculous and asinine points to try to demonize the other side. I think that like so much of this, the anti-trans movement from the right, like if you're truly respect freedom, you don't care what consenting grown adults do, including dress up like women. Who gives a shit, right? Those right. people are, they have the right to do whatever the hell they want so long as they don't hurt anybody else. This is like the number one fucking rule. That's why it's called the golden rule, and libertarians call it the non-aggression principle. It's because you don't do unto others as you want done unto you, right? And so, but I think like that just shows like there is a lot of bigotry on the right. And I mean, there's clearly racism and bigotry on the left as well. But on the right, it's like this, it's I think it's anti-gay. And there's a lot of people that are like homophobic on the right that don't like trans people just because it makes them feel uncomfortable. And I'm not gonna lie, a dude in a dress makes me kind of feel uncomfortable too. I don't interact with it. I leave it alone, right? So it doesn't, I don't care about it. I'm not gonna like raise hell and try to stop people from doing that though.
And on the imagine wanting to be that person who really cares what a grown adult does in their home. Again, I think we conflate issues sometimes and it's like, well, but we can't do this to children. I agree. You know, leave kids out of it. And if a consenting adults want to do something, that's on them.
Yeah,
I have many trans friends. I am totally cool with it. I admit, like, it's such not an issue for most people. You know, it's like, well, do you want to share a bathroom? I do share a bathroom often. I don't actually care who's in the bathroom with me. That's why women's bathrooms have stalls. I mean, you know, and the people are like, well, what about the children? Listen, I'm a mom of four. I took my sons and my daughter into the bathroom with me until they were old enough to be able to do things on their own. You know, my 11-year-old would come into the bathroom with me. So if the point is that there's a man in the bathroom, I brought men into the bathroom too. You know, it's just, you gotta use common sense. Why are we antagonizing people who are obviously going through something on their own? I don't want to put words into their mouths, but you know, they're going through their own things. I find it such a weird conversation. Yeah, if you're not hurting anyone, what business of mine is it? And if you're in the bathroom with me, just, you know, don't do anything that is illegal or criminal. Don't look over the stall or under the stall. I mean, it's just so common sense. I don't know how we got to this point in this country where it's such a big deal.
I mean, I do think social media has played a big part of it, right? Because, I mean, naturally, we're somewhat tribalistic creatures, and the polarity, the incentive, I think, for vilifying your cultural, I don't want to say opponent, but the people who are the opposite of culture than you are, it's become very popular. It's become almost a big business. I mean, look how many, you know, conservative, you know, commentators have popped up over just the past 5-6 years and have grown huge, you know, huge audiences. So I think that plays a part of it. It actually speaks to your point as well, Martha, that, you know, we don't see this in real life. It's because it's true. I think most people in real life have respect for each other. Obviously not in all cases, but they're less likely to lash out or vilify, demonize somebody unless it's online. And online kind of feels like this is where the conversation's happening. And maybe that's for better or for worse, you know? So
you got to remember too that they did this whole push against, you know, like I feel like there is a problem with trans in sports and modern day sports. And I think that was also on purpose. It was, you know, they need to create this huge issue. And I do think that that's an issue. I do think that men and women, we have clear biological differences. My youngest child now is 14. I can tell you that that 14-year-old can take me easily. Like he wouldn't even sweat if, you know, if he wanted to. He's taller than I am. He's stronger than I am. So to kind of make it like, well, women and men are exactly the same. We're not. We have some biological differences. I think it's clear. And and saying that men going joining women's sports is somehow acceptable, that's where the issue came in. And so why can't we create a trans team? Like, why is it it's a thing where you have to be accepted as a full-on woman in order for you to be accepted as, you know, whoever you are? Like, I'm totally cool with somebody being who their authentic self. Please just don't join, you know, a woman's team and try and take the spot of these women. We've been fighting so hard for equal rights for such a long time. And now this is like the biggest slap in the face to women. It's like, here, you wanted equal rights. Now men are going to join your space, or, you know, and you have to accept it. And if you don't, now you're going to be labeled as this anti, you know, person. And it's like, no, can we just have, you know, this one thing be for us. Sure. Men get all the, you know, the sports deals, you know, come on. Don't mess with us like this. It's just so offensive in some cases.
No, it's an excellent point. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because, you know, we're certainly trying to provide a balanced assessment here. And I think the left is certainly no angels when it comes to this too. And they're really trying to ram in this tolerance and acceptance and inclusion, you know, down our throats, and more or less kind of fitting a round peg into a square hole, you know, and a lot of people just aren't culturally, socially ready for that. So there has been some backlash, and I'm right there with you. I don't think that adult men who are pretending to be women should be in women's sports either. That just doesn't make any sense. So, but
I wouldn't even say pretending. I mean, I think that Sarah Higdon, I think a very well-known libertarian trans person, she did something a while back where she hadn't been to the gym. I don't know if ever, or like, you know, she hadn't been like a weightlifter, and she showed how easy it was for her to start benching these numbers that most women can't get to, you know? So even if you are fully trans and this is who you are, you still have some biological advantage to a traditional woman. So I think it's, you know, regardless, whatever, not the point, just saying. I think that
I was being a bit flippant there for sure, but you're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. And there are certainly people who absolutely believe that they are a woman in a man's body. So I'm not going to try to debate that or talk about the moral imperative there or any of that stuff. And I agree. I mean, I'm right there. I want people to live their lives. I'm not trying to tell them what to do whatsoever. But why don't we, seeing that we are getting a little low on time here, let's shift gears, because there is something I kind of wanted to hear about. And I'm sure you're probably tired of talking about this by now. And I don't want to be boring or cliche or focus too much on topics that, you know, 100 other podcasts have talked to you about. And of course, this was a couple of years ago now, but this just seems a little too juicy to pass up. And I kind of wanted to hear your strategy regarding it. So with that said, what comes to mind when I ask you about the bio caption you used on one of your social media platforms that said, "A Miami girl just trying to make the world a better place"?
Oh, well, yeah, that's exactly how I view myself. I didn't set out to do any of the things that I've done. I, you know, definitely running for office was just, how can I improve my local community? You know, how do you do these things? So that's exactly where I'm at. I see myself as somebody that I just want to improve my local community, do the best that I can in whatever capacity that is. That's either going to speak before the different boards, the commissions, or, you know, going like I have now to Tallahassee, to my state capital, to fight back on this hemp bill, or just, you know, do things. I've tried to help Cuba, my parents' home country, you know, my, I guess, origin country. Just trying to help out as best I can in any way I can. I've been blessed.
Well, I love that. I guess what I was hinting at is, from what I could tell, that was the bio that you had on your OnlyFans platform.
And oh, that's what you wanted me to bring up. I was wondering where you were going with this.
I wanted to ask about your strategy OnlyFans. Of utilizing that. Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously it generated controversy. It got some attention and maybe put a few dollars towards your political campaign. From what I could tell, it was, you know, mostly tame compared to other content on the site. But I was curious, like, where the idea came from and was it successful in accomplishing the goal?
I think it was pretty successful. I don't know that. So where it came from, first of all, I can't take credit for that. That was Esteban Hernandez. He is a political commentator, a Venezuelan political commentator. He does most of his stuff in Spanish. He's a friend of mine, but he was also a consultant on my campaign when I was running for commission. And the reality is, unless you are plugged into the R or the, you know, or the D's, you don't have the machine behind you. And so my political opponent raised $2 million to my $100,000. So I was not going to get the media attention, and I couldn't afford it unless I did something radical. And one day we were sitting around thinking of ideas, and he's like, Martha, you need to do an OnlyFans. And I was like, absolutely not. You are ridiculous. I'm the mother of four. I'm in my 40s. Come on. This is a terrible idea. And he's like, no, think about it. So we debated it, and he won. And we did it. And they actually removed one of my videos. It was too spicy for OnlyFans. And that was one where I was shooting a gun and talking about the Second Amendment. So I guess, yeah, guns are just too controversial for OnlyFans. And actually, I did raise money, but it was not for my campaign. Because as I'm sure many people are aware or not, you have to collect the name, the address, the occupation, all this information from people who donate to your political campaign. Right. And OnlyFans is not exactly the place to do that. So I had to do it personally. I collected about $10,000 and I spent it the week before the election on a party to celebrate all of the people who had been on my campaign. We went to a Bad Bunny concert. I rented the suite and we just had, you know, food and drinks, and it was wonderful. And it was a good experience before the election because, you know, we knew that it was a very, very long shot to actually win against that kind of money, power, and influence. And we were right. We came in second. I did make my opponent spend $1 million of his $2 million war chest, which I am quite proud of because as a libertarian, you don't make it to second place very often. And, you know, I wish I would have won, but we did something. We proved that you can do different things. And it got me on every single local channel. It got me on Univision. They gave me 5 minutes every 30 minutes on Univision to talk about your campaign. Costs about $10,000 or more dollars. So I got 5 whole minutes. It got me on, you know, other Spanish language TV. It got me on Steven Crowder. And I think that is really the value in what I did. So it's cringy. My kids absolutely had to go through with, hey, your mom's on OnlyFans. And that part still kills me to this day. I apologize to my three sons over and over and over again. My daughter didn't have to deal with it the way my sons did. But yeah, it's definitely one of the cringier things that I've done for sure.
I don't think it's cringy. I think it's thinking outside of the box. I think it shows your willingness to, you know, do things that will help move the ball forward for the Liberty community. So I think it's great. I mean, it's a guerrilla tactics at its best, really.
That's what we were doing. We tried so many guerrilla tactics, and that was the one that I'm going to forever be known for. The first political candidate that campaigned on OnlyFans is my title. I will take it to, you know, whatever. It's better than not being remembered, I think.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that for sure. And that's one of the things I saw all over when I was doing a little research over the past couple of days for this interview. So yeah, you might be right about that. But speaking of libertarians not really coming in second place is difficult. Let's just put it that way. I wanted to ask about the current presidential race. I recently had the opportunity to talk to both Chase Oliver and Lars Mapstead on two separate Twitter spaces. And, you know, both of these guys are some of the front runners for the Libertarian Party presidential nomination, along with former podcast guests on the show, Michael Rechtenwald, and a few others. Now, you don't, of course, have to divulge who you're voting for, but like out of all the presidential candidates that are running, are there any that have your attention or support? And I guess this would probably devolve into a conversation about the effectiveness of voting. But like if push came to shove with the uniparty showdown between Trump and Biden, like would you vote for Trump?
Oh, this is like such a terrible, like, I hate that we're in this position. So first of all, I am friends with both Lars and Chase, and I think that they're both excellent human beings. And we definitely are very lucky in the Libertarian Party to have so many amazing human beings that, you know, want to even do this thing, because it's an uphill, you know, it's an uphill battle. You got to get ballot access. You got to fight with people, because even in my campaign, it was mostly me fighting libertarians. I didn't have to battle Republicans or Democrats. As a matter of fact, the Democrat that was running in the race against me, she paid for our joint election night party. We did not have a battle between R's and D's and L's. It was a battle of libertarians coming after me. And that is the reality of where we are today in the party. So do I have hope for the libertarian candidate? No. And that is because I worked for, I volunteered for the Joe Jorgensen campaign in 2020. And I realized that we've come a long way, but I don't think we've come far enough. Yeah. So I won't choose between my friends. Whoever gets the nomination, I will support wholeheartedly. I no longer hold a title. I'm not officially a libertarian. I will always be a libertarian, but I don't have the designation, so I can't vote either way. So I don't want to choose between any of them. Whoever does, I'm also friends with Mike Termont. I mean, there's so many good, honest people that are running, and I wish they had the opportunity. I wish that they could beat the system. There is a very strong possibility that Trump will pardon Ross. And if Trump comes out and says that he will, I will be voting for Trump because of that. I am, in this case, a single issue voter. If I believed that the libertarians could get to the White House, I would absolutely, as I've done for the last almost 20 years, vote libertarian. I just, in this instance, I have to be a little more practical, and I hate that it's come to that. I absolutely hate it. I wish that I could vote my conscience. I agree. I think that voting is just ridiculous in and of itself. I don't know that it's doing any good. But I need to see this kid out of jail.
Yeah.
I have to.
No, I think we could both appreciate your honesty there. And in this case, I mean, shit, I might even vote for Trump. Well, not really. But if he was to pardon Ross, then that's certainly a bright spot in his campaign. And Mike Termont, he's great as well. I saw him speak at the Libertarian Convention last month, and he's very articulate. I guess I wasn't even as familiar with him.
He's great. He supported me in my campaign, too. He's a good guy. I really like them all. It's just, you know, it's like asking me to pick which one of my kids I prefer. I like them all. They're awesome people.
All right, free thinkers, this episode is nearing the end. We wanted to take this time to remind you, if you found value in this conversation, please consider hitting that like button and subscribing to the Free Thought Project podcast on your preferred platform of choice. It's an easy, no-cost way to support us and ensure you never miss an episode. Also, the Free Thought Project operates primarily on the generosity of our listeners. If you believe in our mission and support our cause, please consider donating or subscribing by going to the membership tab at the top of our website. Your contributions ensure we are able to continue our important work, having these important conversations, and your donations help us do just that. Lastly, if you're part of an organization or own a business that aligns with our mission and values, we are currently inviting sponsorships for our podcast. This is a fantastic opportunity to promote your product or make your brand visible to our engaged audience while supporting meaningful discourse. Thank you for your support, Freethinkers, and as always, thank you for listening.
Well, we just have a couple minutes here left, so I was going to Well, I was going to ask about RFK, but seems like opening a huge can of worms, especially with his new running mate. And it just seems like such an odd choice. But I know we're cutting it close, and we do have a hard stop today. So you've been kind enough to support us here at the Free Thought Project for quite a few years now. And you often retweet my posts on Twitter to your 56,000 followers, which, you know, I'm extremely grateful for. So why don't you share with our audience where they could find more of your work and posts, and how they could support you, or I guess anything else you'd like to advertise or plug?
Thanks so much. Yeah, so people can find me on social media. I'm no longer on Facebook. Facebook removed me, and I don't really care to fight back for my rights on Facebook. So mostly Twitter. I love Twitter. I'm Bueno for Miami on all social media. And argood.com. We're, you know, we're plugging along. We're trying to bring people solutions to everyday problems. Currently, our product is a Delta 8, which seems to be helping people with things like anxiety and helps them relax. We call it the chill pill. And we will be shortly coming out with other solutions for sleep and pain and focus. So stay tuned there. But yes, Bueno for Miami is where everyone can find me on Twitter.
And that's Our Good. So OURGOOD.com, guys. So definitely check that out and get yourself some Delta 8. And one thing I was going to mention, I know we're wrapping up here, but you said that there's a strain of weed that makes you eat less, the THCV. I don't think I've ever heard of that. It's like the complete opposite. You know, you're supposed to get the munchies, right? So
right.
That's definitely really interesting.
Yeah, we have one of the products that we're coming out with will have THCV in it. It's the main ingredient, but it's not a strain. So like I said, cannabinoids are the things that are found within the plant. So THC, right, for example, is a cannabinoid. And so it's just one of the over 120 that are found within the plant that just haven't been studied enough. But in these mice studies, it's showing that it may suppress feeling appetite. It does help with insulin regulation. But the most important part is it helps you focus, too. It seems to be, at least for me in the trials that I've been doing, I love it. I've been taking it mostly because I can focus and get through my to-do list. So we hope to be coming out with that in the next few months. We're going through trials now, and we're perfecting it. But yeah, I'm really excited for it. I think that there's a huge market for people who want to have more of a natural experience, not take so many drugs, I guess. Although I don't know what you would technically call a plant like cannabis. I know people call it a drug.
Medicine.
To me, it's medicine.
Yeah. Well, that makes three of us. Well, you know what's even more impressive, Martha, is the fact that you're doing all this work online and on social media, and you're active in your community, and you're an entrepreneur, businesswoman, grinding and hustling, all this stuff. But the most impressive part is you're also a mother of four, which I know you touched on a little bit. And that's truly inspiring for all of us that tend to make excuses, you know, that we blame on the kids for, you know, not having the time or for inaction. So, you know, that should definitely be a huge motivator if you're out there doing it.
To be fair, my kids are older now. This is why I really became active around 2016. Before then, I was a libertarian. But, you know, when kids are little, it's so much harder. So don't be hard on yourselves either, please. My oldest is now 23. My youngest is 14. My life has completely changed. You know, now that they're self-sufficient, they can make their own foods. They can do their own things. I no longer have to wipe butts. You know, please, if you are a struggling new parent, please do not look at me and be like, you should be doing more. Your kids will grow older, I promise. And then life gets better.
Life after kids, it does exist, apparently. Okay, that's good to know.
Yes, and have kids, please, especially if you're liberty-minded. Have lots and lots of kids. I try and encourage everybody. Kids are the best thing that ever happened to me. And yeah, we should all be having lots more.
More freedom, babies, more sharp minds to steer the world in the right direction. So thank you for your time today. And I don't want to speak for Matt, but I'm sure we'd be grateful to have you on the podcast again in the future. So yeah, we very much appreciate you. And thanks for your time today, Martha.
Thank you, guys. This was awesome.